Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, forget the usual charts today. We're holding something different, like a portable landscape.
Yeah, exactly. We're diving into Hanafuda, the Japanese flower cards.
Right, and these aren't just cards. They're like a mini library of folklore, aren't they?
Yeah.
Born from the Edo period, a pretty uncertain time.
Definitely. And our mission today, it's specific. We're zoning in just on the January suit, the pine or matsu.
It's just January, right?
Yeah, because even in that one month, you've got these conflicting clues almost. Is it pine and crane? Or maybe this nightingale people mention. And what about that red ribbon?
Ah, the tanzaku.
Exactly. We need to sort of unravel this to really get the deeper cultural meaning packed into these tiny cards.
Okay, let's start with the big one then. The hikari card, the bright card. Pine and crane. Matsunitsuru. So the pine. Why is it such a like a bedrock symbol in Japan?
Well, it really boils down to resilience, longevity, virtue, too. Think about it. It stays green right through the toughest winter.
That's true.
And there's that incredible story, the miracle pine from the 2011 tsunami in Rikuzen Takata. Just one tree left standing. It became this huge symbol for the whole country, endurance personified.
Wow. Okay, so that's the pine. Powerful. And then you pair it with the crane, the suru.
Right, the bird of happiness. Legends say it lives for, what, 1,000 years?
2,000 years. So pine and crane together.
Yeah.
That's like eternal youth, good fortune.
Pretty much, yeah. Eternal youth, luck, prosperity. And it's not just random. It's deeply codified.
Codified how?
Look at the card itself. The crane, the pine, and often a red rising sun. That immediately points to Shugatsu.
New Year's.
Exactly. The whole combination screams New Year's blessings and marital harmony, too. You see it a lot on wedding kimonos.
Like the katamatsu decorations, the pine and bamboo things at the door.
Precisely. It connects to that tradition of welcoming the spirits, starting fresh.
Okay, that makes sense for the pine and crane. But you mentioned the nightingale. That throws people off sometimes, right? Sort of just mix it up with pine.
Yeah, that's a really common false trail. You hear bird and winter turning to spring, and people sometimes land on nightingale for January.
But it's wrong.
It's wrong for January. The nightingale, the ugisu, is absolutely key, but it belongs with the plum blossom, ume. That's the February suit.
Ah, February.
Mm-hmm. The nightingale song, that famous hokkekyo, that's what really signals spring's arrival. And the plum, well, it blooms super early, sometimes even through snow.
So that's the pair symbolizing resilience and the new cycle starting. Plum and nightingale.
Exactly. It's a classic theme across East Asia, that singing spring idea.
Right.
But for Hanafuda, it's February story, not January's.
Got it. Okay, back to January then, the last piece.
Mm-hmm.
The red poetic ribbon, the tanzaku.
Right. Historically, these tanzaku were actual strips of paper. People wrote wishes or poems on them, like for Tanabata Festival.
And the one the January card has writing.
It does. It reads Aka Yoroshi.
Aka Yoroshi, meaning?
Well, it has this brilliant double layer. Literally, it means something like red is good, or maybe clearly good.
Red is good. Okay.
But it's also the name of a valuable part combination in many Hanafuda games. Collecting the three red poetry ribbons, the Aka Tan Yaku.
Well, that's clever. So the card itself tells you it's valuable in the game.
Kind of, yeah. It blends the poetry, the aesthetic, and the actual game mechanic perfectly. And the color red, aka, is huge in Japan anyway. Energy, life, protection. Think of Shinto shrine gates.
The torii gates, yeah.
Yeah.
And the flag, the hanamaru, the sun.
Exactly. It's all tied together.
So speaking of how these were made,
mm-hmm.
we got asked about the artists. Who actually designed these intricate little scenes?
Ah, well, that's the thing. We can't point to a specific person. Like, here's a portrait of the Hanafuda master. They were anonymous.
Anonymous, why?
You have to remember the context. Tokugawa Japan, gambling was strictly banned. Playing cards were illegal.
Right, the government cracked down.
So the artists, the creators, they had to be clever. They made the designs more abstract, more focused on nature and seasons, less obviously like European playing cards. It's a bit like ukiyo-e aesthetic sometimes, stylized, evocative.
So anonymity was basically a survival tactic to keep the cards themselves from being banned outright.
Exactly. Self-preservation for the art form in the game.
But there is a legacy, isn't there? A kind of portrait of the originators.
There is, in a way, the most lasting legacy. The company that was founded in 1889 specifically to produce and sell these cards.
Go on.
A company you might have heard of. Its name essentially means leave luck to heaven. Nintendo.
Nintendo.
Yeah.
Started with Hanafuda cards.
Wow. Started with these very cards. So the deck itself, born out of opposition, filled with meaning in every flower, every bird. It's incredibly resilient. It have evolved, survived, just like that evergreen pine.
That's amazing. So, thinking about this for you, the listener, what does this Hanafuda story really show us?
Well, it demonstrates how sometimes, you know, rules, even censorship, can spark this really unique underground creativity, anonymous art bypassing the system.
Which leads to a pretty interesting final thought. What kinds of modern creative work, maybe abstract art, maybe digital stuff, could be masking something else right now? Something maybe forbidden or controversial, just waiting for its moment to, well, maybe become the next Nintendo.
Something to think about.